they'll do anything. Feel their bodies with poison things just to feel good. Everything I've learned be so hard. Can't you see I'm giving up? I don't know where you are. Where are you? All in black clouds come over me. They darken my skies. If it's how I look at things, to give me new eyes.
Do you or someone you know suffer from addiction? While many of us have an addiction to something, we have few places to turn to get the help we need. Welcome to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. Learning about addiction and that you are not alone is the first step in getting things back on track. Our show will bring you to that first step and much more. Now, here is Rebecca Bullion.
Well, hello and welcome to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. I am very pleased today to have a wonderful guest speaker, Rob Weiss. Hello, Rob.
Morning.
Today the topic is going to be the sexual addiction epidemic. And tell us a little bit about yourself, Rob, and how you got into this field.
Well, I'm a clinical social worker, so by training, I trained at the university level in social work. And I was very interested at the time in HIV, which is back in the late 80s, early 90s, and the transmission of HIV in this country and how people were becoming ill. And I came to realize that part of it had to do with sexual behavior choices people were making that, you know, that seemed like they didn't really want to make, but they went out there and made them anyway. And I became very curious and involved in that area of study.
Tell us a little bit about the Sexual Recovery Institute.
Well, I had the opportunity after grad school to start to work with people who also were working with sexual behavior problems. And when I say sexual behavior problems, you know, people always think immediately sexual offending, and that's really not what I'm talking about. The area of the work that I am mostly involved with is sex addiction. So I became very quickly involved in the sex addiction field, and I worked for Patrick Carnes, who was the de facto leader and the role model for me for many years. And then I opened an agency. I thought, you know, hey, I know how to do this. I can do therapy. I can see these people. I can help with recovery. I didn't know how to run a business, but that I learned later. and that's how it began. I just spent the last 18 to 20 years working in the field of sex addiction. And those of you or if you realize and can see what's happened related to the internet in the last 22 years, I entered the field at a time when we were seeing a great escalation in the problem or a great increase in the problem because of technology. And that has continued to date.
Oh, yes. Well, I want to talk about the epidemic as it is connected to the internet and all the apps. Let's go ahead and talk about that now.
Sure.
Since we're on the subject. I guess that is part of the addiction explosion is because of access.
Access and anonymity, affordability. I mean, all those are considered the three big A's. We call them the triple A engine: access, affordability, and anonymity related to internet sex. Because, you know, if you just think about 22 years ago, if I wanted to go buy some pornography, you know, I had to get in my car, get dressed, get in my car, drive to that place under the bridge where I didn't want to talk to, you know, to hope nobody saw me, park out back. We have great movies and stuff about comedy movies about guys doing that kind of thing, and then I would have a very limited selection of pornography that I had to choose from, which all of which was expensive, and half the time I ended up renting it or borrowing it because it, you know, videos were expensive, and then you take it home and use it and then bring it back. And if you think about that compared to what it takes to look at pornography today, which simply means I pick up my phone, the instantaneous nature of which this material is available has been a game changer.
So it's much more concealable than alcohol or drug abuse.
Well, I think it's a whole different animal in a sense. You know, I don't think that, well, concealable in the sense certainly that you're not walking around drunk or high. You're probably not going to drive into a tree while you're, you know, in the intensity of the fantasy of wanting to sexually act out. but it nonetheless has incredibly destructive consequences for people. And unfortunately, you know, it seems hard enough for those of us in our culture to understand substance addictions like prescription drugs or alcohol, or, you know, we still have somewhat of a moral judgment of people who drink and use and don't stop, and we say in some way, well, if they just tried harder or if they were just better people. And I think when it comes to behavioral addictions like gambling or eating disorders or sexual behavior, it's even harder for people to understand why is it that someone can't just say no. And so the destruction that takes place related to sexual behavior is not only external, like divorces and diseases and arrests and things like that. It also has to do with the destructions of somebody's soul, if you will, or their personal integrity.
So what are some of the ways that it gets discovered?
Well, most often, I mean, I don't think any addict, and I think anyone who understands addiction will understand this. You know, I've never met an addict yet who went and got help because they wanted to be a better person. I mean,
right.
On some level, alcoholics like to drink, and sex addicts like to go to porn shops or pick up people, and gamblers like to go to casinos, and unless they have a reason to stop, they don't stop. And they, unfortunately, and this is the nature of addiction, it becomes the driving force in someone's life. So, you know, people don't stop because they say, well, you know, today's the day. And when they do say today's the day, 3 weeks later, they're back where they started. So, you know, that's the nature of addiction. You may say you want to stop all you want. That doesn't mean you can or will. But even when people say they want to stop, they don't generally show up for help until there's a crisis. So people come into treatment for sex addiction. I would say 80% of my referrals are what I would call wife-driven, meaning that someone is in a primary relationship and their spouse has found out over time, or more often, sadly, all of a sudden, that person has been, you know, let's say seeing prostitutes a couple of days a week and looking at porn a few hours a night, and maybe has had a couple of affairs over the last few years, and really has a persistent and consistent pattern of sexual acting outside of the relationship. And once that unravels, most loving spouses are unwilling to put up with that degree of infidelity, that degree of lying in a double life, and they'll say, you know, you get some help or I'm out of here. And that drives probably a good deal of our referrals. And I'm not talking about the occasional affair. I'm not talking about, you know, you went to a guy went to a buddy's bachelor party and they went to a strip club. I'm not talking about, you know, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas. I'm talking about people who act out sexually every single weekend, you know, every single evening for 2 hours a night. You know, there's a real consistency and a persistency to sex addiction, like any addiction.
So what are some of the signs, like the outward signs that someone would start to recognize that this is going on?
Well, if I was in a relationship with a sex addict, I think what I would notice, first of all, is they seem a lot less available. I mean, where are they? They might say they're working. They might. The one thing about sex addiction that might be a little different than other addictions is, you know, if you've got some drugs in hand, you can sneak in the next room and do your drugs and be back with your family in 5 minutes. But if you're a sex addict, it usually takes some time to lose yourself in the porn, takes some period of time to go in and out of those adult bookstores or go to those porn shops or whatever it is that you're doing. So one of the first things that happens when you're involved with a sex addict, you notice that they become less and less available, first time-wise and then second emotionally. You know, they tend to be distant. They tend to be talking to you but looking over your shoulder at the butt of the waitress or the arms of the waiter, and, you know, on the other side of the on the other side of you. They're emotionally distracted. They're also often become very irritable and angry and will push loved ones away. You know, they feel bad about what they're doing and they don't necessarily want anyone to be close to them because they don't want to be found out and they don't want to feel worse. And there's nothing worse for a sex addict than having an incredibly loving partner, because then you feel like, well, you know, how do I have the right to do this? You know, if you happen to have an angry, overweight partner, it's a lot easier to be a sex addict because then you can blame them. And you can say, oh, well, they're so overweight and they're so unloving and they're so unavailable. What's someone to do but go out and, you know, have this thing go on? And so emotional and physical unavailability is really one of the first signs that I would say, what the heck's going on here? And then if there's anything, you know, if I found that someone was doing things sexually that I didn't know about or that surprised me, you know, that they were spending a lot of time looking at porn. And I thought, well, gee, I didn't know they spent that much time. And I investigated. I found out, you know, it's not just a little, it's a lot. And then how much and how often. And most of all, I think sex addicts, like all addicts, lie. You know, they lie and they keep secrets and they live a double life. So once that begins to unravel and a partner or a friend or a family member begins to find out to what degree that person's life has been taking up with sexual behavior, it becomes pretty clear something is not right here.
Yes, yes. Well, listen, I want to go ahead. I've got a question to ask that might take a little more time to answer, but let's go ahead and go to break first, if you don't mind. And let me say that anybody who wants to call in live can call 866-472-5792, and we'll be back in just a minute with Rob Weiss.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back. Today, I'm interviewing Rob Weiss, and the topic of our talk is the sexual epidemic. Sexual addiction epidemic. And I want to pick back up where we were talking about signs and symptoms and how to recognize addiction in this area from the addict's point of view as well as from the spouse's point of view. Rob?
Well, I think, you know, it's hard to do, you know, this is, sex addiction is one of the hardest things for people to conceptualize and then to really make sense of, because everybody has sex, you know. And sex is a good thing. It helps us, continue the race. It's an enjoyable thing. So, you know, it's hard for most people to conceptualize sex addiction. And, you know, one of the ways I talk about it, this might be useful for people, I think, is that, you know, in the same way many of us drink, many of us have a glass of wine or might even get drunk, somebody's wedding. But if a problem showed up with our drinking, or we decided our drinking, we didn't like the way we drink, we would just stop. You know, I know I don't have a problem with that. I have a glass of wine and then usually put it down after half a glass, and my alcoholic friends say, how did you do that? Don't you want a second glass or a third glass? My alcoholic friends don't understand how I can have a glass of wine and not want three or four or five, because alcoholism isn't my issue. And in a very similar way, you know, while everyone enjoys sex in a very positive way, there are some people for whom, and a very small percentage, but some people for whom, when they get caught up in certain kinds of behaviors, they find themselves unable to get away from them, and they really become the driving force of their lives. And whereas you and I might occasionally look at a piece of pornographic material, or we might have a little fling with someone, I'm not saying this is good or bad, I'm just saying it's what people do, or we might, you know, or might not find some fun sexual thing that distracts us for a short period of time, sex addicts find themselves obsessively and repetitively getting involved in patterns of behavior where they end up keeping secrets, they end up lying, they end up being manipulative, and really they end up living a completely double life. If you ask me the signs and symptoms of sex addiction, you know, I would say things like loss of control, just like with any addiction, you know, where the person says, I'm not going to do that anymore, or I don't want to do that, I'm not going to go to that place, I'm not going to see that person, I'm not going to look at those images, and whether they're promising themselves or someone else, they're unable to not do it. or they have consequences. You know, they've had a loved one who saw them doing what they were doing or found out and said, I don't want to put up with this anymore. Maybe they had a boss find out that they had a lot of pornography stored at work, and they said, look, dude, you're going to lose your job. And yet they continue the behavior despite those consequences. Addicts are also, like sex addicts, like any addicts, are very preoccupied. You know, the possibility of hooking up for sex, finding some sexual experience, getting into something with someone sexually is always on their mind. And so it doesn't mean they're not like my bulldog. You know, I have a bulldog, that's why I'm saying that. And my bulldog drools a lot. So when I think of obsession, you know, I think of somebody who's drooling. I mean, sex addicts aren't running around drooling all the time, but they do have, just like any drug addict who goes to a party and doesn't have any drugs, but he'll hit everyone at the party and say, hey, do you like to party? Because I like to party, and maybe we could go outside, until they find someone to get the drugs from. Sex addicts are very similar. They're kind of always on the hunt, you know, looking for that possibility.
What are some of the roots of this?
Well, there are many roots of it, of sex addiction, and I think that's one of the reasons why it's hard for even clinicians to understand. The most basic, if you look at sex addiction as being a symptom, then the underlying problem is really one of an intimacy disorder. Now, there are many ways that a human being could learn to avoid intimacy. Let's say they were abused or beaten or violated as a child, they would learn that intimate relationships hurt. Some people are innately or within themselves unable to create intimacy. Maybe they're pathologically shy, or maybe they avoid relationships because, you know, they don't know how to build them. So there are many reasons why somebody might have a difficult time building intimacy. And I'm not just talking about romantic and sexual intimacy. I'm talking about close friendships, deep and enduring relationships, committed situations where when I'm in trouble or I need help or I just want to have fun, I call that person. And that person knows me completely and utterly, and there's no secrets between us, intimacy. And the clients that I work with, they section off their lives. They partialize themselves. They don't want to be fully known. They avoid situations where people can hurt them or where they feel they might get exposed for being unlovable. And so since we all need love, and some of the people I work with have a hard time allowing themselves to be able to be loved, they find these intensity-based ways to distract themselves. And going to a porn shop or looking at porn for hours and hours online or having multiple intensity-based affairs, these are all great ways to feel important, special, powerful, connected, a part of, all those things that we really want, except when it's done in terms of sex addiction, it's an illusion. You know, there's no prostitute who really loves you. There's no affair partner who's really going to hurt you in the beginning of an affair, you know, and those are the situations that sex addicts are looking for. They're looking for intensity-based experiences where they don't have to take emotional risks to feel the things that we all want to feel when we're with someone who cares about us.
Yes, yes. So I guess at the Sexual Recovery Institute, that's one of the things that you work on is the development of intimacy versus intensity.
Well, that's a very good phrase. We like to say that addicts, most addicts, in fact, seek intensity rather than intimacy anyway, sex addicts in particular. But I run several programs, and we have a residential program called The Ranch in Tennessee. And
yes.
I'm very much, of course, I work in sex addiction, so this makes sense. I'm very much in favor of gender-separate addiction treatment. I don't think that teaching people how to get along with the opposite sex is necessarily the goal of treatment, and I find sometimes in treatment people do a little bit of what we call in the South he-in and she-in, and that's not usually helpful for treatment. So I have several treatment environments that I work with, one in Tennessee, which is gender-separate housing, and those folks are there really in rehab. They're in residential treatment for about 35 days, and oftentimes they're finding not only how to deal with the problem in the world and not act it out, but they're dealing with a lot of trauma and abuse underneath, and that's what a residential setting is good for, to be able to really let yourself unwind and unravel and feel safe enough to talk about things that are very, very difficult. And the program I started here in California is just 2 weeks, and I consider that more the executive sex addiction program. That's for the guys who say, oh, I'm not going to do any long-term program. I'm just going to do something to keep my wife quiet, and I'll go get some help, and then she'll leave me alone. And they come out, because that particular program is men only, and they come out here, and they think they're going to get a two-week class. And what happens, of course, is we help them open up emotionally and really deal with what they've done and how it's affected other people and themselves and how to change. I do think the primary treatment for addiction really has to be about how to learn how to not do it. So, you know, in all the treatment that I do, and I think that all good treatment centers really should do a lot of education. You know, what triggers you? I need someone to know, you know, not once they're already have the computer turned on and it's 2 a.m. and their partner's in bed and they're going to spend 4 hours in front of the computer looking at porn. Well, by then it's a little late to stop. What I need them to learn is, when did you first learn about the idea that you, what if the idea first come to you that you wanted to do this? And when it did come to you, you know, how did you decide to deal with that? You know, and what led you? So part of treatment is helping people see the step-by-step decisions they make that lead them to the intensity-based experiences that they lose themselves in. And then we have to give them alternatives. You know, when you first thought of doing that, what's something else you could do? I could call a friend. I could go for a walk. I could do some meditation, you know, and teaching them how to make different choices than simply turn to the sex for distraction.
Yes. Let's go back and talk a little bit more about social media and what are some of the ways that people are accessing?
Well, I mean, it's a whole new world. There's no question about it. I am 51 years old, and I can tell you it is a whole new world. You know, there used to be a time when if you wanted to have sex with someone, you actually had to talk to them. I know that sounds amazing to someone who's under the age of 20, but there used to be a time when those of us old folks, if we wanted to have sex, we'd have to kind of, you know, brush our hair back, put on some cologne, put on some nice clothes, and go out and try to meet someone who might possibly be attracted to us to want to have sex. And that is not the world we live in today. You know, the world we live in today is one where if I want to be sexual, I can simply pick up my phone and click on a sex app on my smartphone, and it will geolocate where I am in space and time, just like you can geolocate a restaurant or shopping or mapping if you're, you know, using it as a map program to find your way around. And it will geolocate not just me, but anyone else within my geographic area who's looking for sex. And then if they are looking for sex, they'll show up on my phone with their picture, and it will let me know if they're online right now, and I can start chatting with them. So literally, I can create a sexual situation, homosexual, heterosexual, whatever, because there are apps for all of them. And I can find a sex partner, you know, depending on how rural or urban the area is. I mean, if I'm in New York or I'm in Chicago, in a busy part of town, I can probably locate 50 people looking for sex within, I don't know, 2,000 feet. And if I'm in a rural area, I can probably readily find someone within 5 or 10 miles who wants to have sex, who's looking right now. So the whole idea that you even have to use your social skills or use your ability to charm or even have to flirt or, you know, other than a few cute little texts and hopefully a good shot of yourself, a good photo of yourself you're going to send online, that's about all you need today to have a sexual experience. And unfortunately, that doesn't necessarily teach people how to be kind to each other, how to love each other, how to grow something meaningful. And what it does reinforce is you can get in, you can get out, and you don't have to care about them, and you don't have to care about you. You can just have this quick, fun thing. It's kind of like buying some bubble gum, and you're done.
Well, you know, it sounds like that would definitely increase the intensity of the thrill, but it sounds dangerous.
Well,
do a lot of people find themselves?
I think for women, certainly this is dangerous, and there are female sex addicts. I know we don't think in our culture, often when we think of out-of-control sexual behavior, we think of men. And the reality is that there are quite a few women who act out sexually. They're just a little better at hiding it. Or oftentimes women are in the sex industry. You know, they're prostitutes or they're dancers. And I would say, I've been running a women's program for sex and relationship disorders for many years now. And I can tell you that without question, about 75% of the women that we work with have had really profound abuse in childhood. So, you know, these women are acting out the things that happened to them, and they are struggling with their own self-esteem and sense of self. And so there certainly are women out there who, like many people would say, they want a partner, they want a relationship, they want something meaningful. Maybe they even have that, but then they have a consistent drumbeat of sexual activity on the side. And I don't mean the occasional affair or an old boyfriend that you ran in 20 years ago. I mean the consistent seeking of something going on or more than one thing going on in addition to your primary relationship. And we have females who are doing that a lot. For them, it is much more dangerous, because if you think about a man walking into a motel room or a apartment and finding a woman there he doesn't know, he's probably safer, unless she has a gun, than a woman walking into an apartment with a strange man just simply because of physical size. And we do have women who will become entranced with the things a guy has to say online or on the app, and before she knows it, she finds herself walking over to his house or coming by his apartment, and that's a dangerous situation.
Yes. We're talking about people getting lost in the thrill of it and caught up in the fantasy. It almost sounds like people that have dissociative disorders could do this and not remember that they did it.
Well, I would say that most sex addicts I know are healthier than that. They are aware of what they're doing, and they're making decisions that are conscious and that they remember. But I think that you're right in that it feels to them like, I've had addicts say, well, it was like another part of me just sort of took over, or I felt like it was in a dream, you know. And what that really is that's what happens when you have a strong release of adrenaline, you have a strong release of endorphins, you have a strong release of dopamine. In other words, when the body is reacting with extreme excitement and fear, which is what comes up when you're going to go seek someone out for sex that you've never met before, and maybe you spent 3 hours looking for them, you know, your heart's going to be pounding, your breathing's going to be shallow, your hands are going to be clammy, and you're going to be in a different state of consciousness, because that is the goal for the sex addict, for the gambler, for the person who is into intensity-based experiences. The goal is to get high on my own excitement and to lose myself in that. The sex addict is not really looking for this, well, is not really, the sexual act is not the goal. The goal is looking for it, hunting for it, thinking about it, fantasizing about it. It's more like, the compulsive gambler, you know, their goal really isn't to win or lose. You'd think the gambler's goal would be to win. Well, gamblers will sit there, win or lose, until they're out of money. And, in a similar way, for the sex addict, it's not so much about the sex. It's about losing yourself in the experience of the search.
Yeah. Yes, I understand. And I was going to ask you, what is it really about sex, or is it about the escapism of the feeling and other things? That kind of segues into, comparing and contrasting sex addiction and love addiction. But right now we've got to go to break. Can we talk about that when we come back?
Absolutely.
Any listener that wants to call in and ask a question, the number is 866-472-5792. This is Rebecca with Addiction in America. Be back in just a minute.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
Follow the Voice America Talk Radio Network on Twitter. We're at Voice America TRN. You'll get the latest fix on what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and general happenings that you should know about at the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Now you don't have to miss anything when you're away from your home or office. Just go to twitter.com/Voice America TRN or follow along with us at Voice America TRN, the Voice America Talk Radio Network. We're on the cutting edge of social media. Can you keep up?
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Okay, well, welcome back, listeners. I wanted to pick up talking with Rob Weiss about the difference between sexual addiction and love addiction. Rob, can you comment?
Well, you know, you were asking, it's a really interesting question. First of all, there, you know as well as I do, Rebecca, these are concepts that some people think are just ridiculous. And how could you be addicted to love? How could you be addicted to sex? I mean, these are, you know, modern constructs of, you know, really these people are just sleazy or perverted or immoral or, and I think it's really important to say that, most of the people that I work with, 90% of the people I see in treatment centers, and I've been working with sexual disorders for 20 years, they don't grow up and they don't wake up one day and say, oh, gee, I want to marry someone or get in a committed relationship and then ruin my life and the life of my children by having sex with 100 people. You know, I want to be a bad guy and I want to have sex with all these people and I don't care how it affects the people I love or affects my future. I don't think that is really who these people are. You know, I just really want to say that people that I work with who act out sexually in a way that is sexually addicted, or people who are what we might call love addicted or get very obsessive about love relationships, you know, these are people who have emotional disturbances. They have emotional challenges. And part of what the general public doesn't understand, I think, about emotional illness is how can someone seem emotionally, intellectually intact? You know, how can somebody run a business or be a doctor or be a busy mom with kids and still have this whole double life going on? And the reality is that our emotions and our intellect, they run on different tracks. And you can be extremely emotionally vulnerable and fragile in some ways and yet be president of the United States or be, you know, a famous congressman. We have lots of examples of people who are very intellectually intact and doing lots of good things for the world, and then they turn around and they have this whole double life around sex or gambling or eating or whatever it is that you never knew about. And I don't look at those people as bad people. I look at those people who are as troubled people. And I think that takes some of the moral sting out of it.
Yes.
When you talk about love addiction, it really is, I think, more of how a woman would act out this disorder. And it's not to say that men don't do this, but in general, male sex addicts let me back up. Let me talk about how men and women look at sex. In general, men tend to objectify body parts. In other words, what turns a man on is, you know, your breasts, your butt, your hair, your eyes, your, you know, their men are looking at, and men are turned on by, in general, men, not just sex addicts, but all men, are turned on by new stimulation, new visual stimulation. So, you know, and that's why we like porn, because it's constant new body parts and stimulation around those body parts and those acts. Women tend to be built a little differently. When women are sexually aroused by external experience, it usually has some touch of relationship. So men will objectify or, turn into objects, body parts. They won't see the whole person. They'll more look at the butt or the breasts or whatever. Women will tend to objectify relationships. So they'll look at someone, they'll say, I wonder how they would be with me, and I wonder if we could do this or that. I wonder if they'd take care of me. I wonder if we could have a family. So women will go into fantasy around who that person might be with them, if they might fall in love, all that kind of stuff. So just as someone can be addicted to the constant pursuit of a sexual high, someone can also have an addictive relationship to the constant pursuit of the idea of intense love and romance and heart-pounding fantasy and that thing we all want to have it when we're 19 and we're dating and we're at the beginning of, you know, and even in when we first fall in love and find that person, who doesn't want that? The thing is, for the love addict, you know, they just want that. They just want that heart-pounding intensity of being in that fresh love over and over and over again. And when they've been with someone for a year and a half or something, and
anymore.
Well, when you've been with someone for a while, they just become another person. And you see that they fart occasionally, and they have a few warts, you know, and you you love them anyway. And that's when the beginning of real intimacy occurs. You know, when you see a person as just a person and you accept and love them for everything that they are. And, you know, that's real intimacy, much, much deeper than romantic love that occurs, you know, at the beginning of a relationship.
Okay. And let me interrupt you, Rob.
Sure.
We've got a caller, Phil, on the line. Phil, are you there?
Yeah, hi, I'm here. I enjoyed the show today. It's an interesting topic.
Yes, did you have a question for Rob?
Sure. Well, I had kind of a question about a situation. I'm an attorney, and I run into situations from time to time when you see a client who's maybe on his third or fourth divorce, and you wonder what kind of decisions he's making and kind of poor judgments. If he was a DUI, you know, he'd go to DUI therapy. If it was anger management, we could have a, you know, there's therapy for that. But if you see somebody who you really want to help, where do you send them for this kind of thing? Because there's not really, you know, I guess there's no law against stupid unless they're hurting someone. But in terms of just trying to help somebody out and get a grip on their life and move on and settle down and try to break this addiction pattern, where would you send somebody and who would monitor that?
Well, this is such a great question, because what you're saying to me is that, you know, in our culture, it could seem like getting married a few times is just what people do sometimes. And yet once you're around three or four or more, it may not just be the people you chose. It may also be something about you. And I think people who aren't necessarily, you know, looking at porn 4 hours a day or going out to adult bookstores three times a week, just because they are having affair after affair or marriage after marriage, it still means that there is a problem there. And I appreciate as an attorney that you recognize that, because we have a lot of attorneys who, you know, just say, well, let me handle your next divorce and I'll handle your next divorce. And they're not really caring about the person.
Well, when it's somebody that you build a relationship with your clients over time.
Right.
And,
you see them give away half their worldly possessions again and again and again. And there are children involved and all that.
Usually, sometimes, you know, multiple wives.
So there's a number of websites that you can find information about. One of ours I'll give you is sexualrecovery.com. And I know the word sex scares people. They think, oh, sexual recovery. But there's a lot of information about love and relationship disorders of this nature. There's also a nonprofit called SASH, S-A-S-H, and they're at sash.net. And they also have, there's literature about, there's a lot of books that you can read. There's actually 12-step programs, just like there are for AA or GA, for gamblers, alcoholics. There's a program called Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, or SLAA. If I were the person with this problem, or I knew someone with this problem, I would go onto Amazon and I'd buy the SLAA Big Book. There's no better self-identification book for someone who has this issue, because they will see themselves. And in that particular book, they talk about the guy who's in love with his wife but also having the affair and also seeing the waitress, and his life is like spinning plates. You know, he's running from one to another and one to another. And I always know, by the way, that when a man or a woman walks in my office and they say to me, you know, the real problem is I just can't choose which person because I'm in love with both, I always know that the problem really is that it isn't about either one of the other people. What they really need is to learn how to live with themselves. And so, you know, oftentimes we seek out people to fix part of ourselves, and then when they don't, we dump them, we move on to the next one. And that's a problem the person who has the problem needs to deal with. They don't need to subject other people to it.
Rob, can I interject a question?
Absolutely.
Phil asked, I think that was a great analogy, Phil, of if you get a DUI, you go to DUI school. If
right.
you go, you know, domestic violence, you go to anger management. Does the court get involved in this kind of an issue, and do they monitor it?
No. Are you asking me or your caller?
I'm asking you, Rob, for Phil. Phil asked who monitors this kind of
thing. Yeah, no one monitors. I mean, of course, if somebody crosses the line into offending, they get lots of monitoring, but –
Oh, yes.
95% of my clients aren't offending. They're engaging in consensual behavior with other adults or themselves.
Yeah, okay.
So, as I said, it is more a matter of, I mean, and Phil, you know, here's another way of thinking about it. The people who have these issues, we put them in rooms with other people who have these issues. And they develop friendships and relationships, because nobody understands an addict better than another addict. And if I have or if I had a client, or if I was someone with the kind of problem you describe, I would get them into a 12-step meeting where other people have the problem, and then they can have someone to monitor them, because they can get a sponsor, they can get a colleague. In other words, someone in one of those programs might have a rule for themselves that they don't go on any dates unless they check it out with the person they're working with, or the person who understands them. They don't get involved with someone, and they don't leave the relationship they're in, or they don't make any big decisions around their sex and love life unless they run it by their sponsor, they talk to a therapist. It's the very same kind of actions that you would take if you were an alcoholic or a drug addict.
Wow.
Well, I appreciate that. I mean, a lot of times we just kind of shrug it off as saying, you know, well, there goes another, you know, another bucket of money, and you can't fix something like that. So, but I appreciate your insight, and that's slaa.com.
I think it's probably .org, but if you just look up Sex and Love Addicts Anonymous, or you will find, and you'll walk into rooms where people are saying, you know what, I'm in my third marriage and I'm still having affairs and I just can't seem, and, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. And that's the kind of fellowship that's needed in that kind of situation.
That's my client. I'll bring some business cards.
Great. I'm glad to help.
Thank you so much, Phil, for calling in. We're going to go ahead and go to break, Rob, and we'll pick up with more of the subject when we come back, okay?
Great. Thank you.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Tune in to the Voice America Variety Channel on the Voice America Talk Radio Network. Voice America Variety broadcasts a diverse array of topics, reaching a global community. Our experts come from all walks of life, and the topics they discuss are everything from current events, arts and entertainment, leadership, parenting, relationships, self-improvement, career advice, and a variety of other topics. Check us out today. You're sure to find something of interest. Voice America Variety. Talk on today's hot topics.
Your life, your health, your network. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You are listening to Addiction in America with Rebecca Bullion. If you have a question or comment about our program, please send an email to Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Again, that's Rebecca at addictioninamerica.com. Now, back to the show.
Well, welcome back. This is Rebecca with Addiction in America, and we are continuing on with Rob Weiss, and I wanted to address the issue of the angle. What about the spouse's experience in this? What do they tend to go through, Rob?
You know, it's this is a very sad topic for me because I work with a lot. And obviously, if I work with people who, obviously because I work with people who sexually act out and who are often in relationships, I see a lot of pain. You know, I see a lot of pain in coupleships. I see a lot of pain in families, and there's nothing I won't say there's nothing more painful, but it's one of the most painful things that I experience with a spouse, male or female, when they see betrayal face to face. And I think relationship betrayal is such an important violation that maybe we don't give enough respect to. And I have to say, especially for women, because women tend to be more relational, you know, they tend to be more social, they tend to more lean on others. Men tend to be more independent, even though they're really not. And But, you know, when you tell someone that you love them, you're committed to them, you're going to take care of them, you're going to be there for them, you're going to watch over them, and they're going to watch over you, and then you lie together and live together for a bunch of years, and one day, and literally this can often be the case, one day you turn around and realize that there's all this stuff that's been going on that you didn't know about, that is affected and has the potential to affect your family, your safety, your health, the betrayal is very profound.
Wow.
And when someone is betrayed in that way, what it causes is like a trauma reaction. So what I often see is in spouses is they just look like crazy people. You know, one day they're, I hate him, I want to kill him, I don't want to be with him anymore, I never want to, and the next day they're having sex with him every day to make sure he doesn't go out and have sex with other people, and then they're calling divorce lawyers, and then they're, you know, looking for a honeymoon cottage. They're just all over the map. And it really is very much like somebody hit their kid with a truck and they don't know whether they're going to live or die. You know, they have been in a relationship for a period of time and they have no idea what's going to happen to it. And they thought they knew that person and now they don't have any idea who that person is, because if you could do all these sexual things and not tell me, well, then who are you?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. What an experience. There are support groups for spouses, yes?
There are books and support groups for spouses. This field has really grown tremendously, I think, in relationship to the amount of infidelity we're seeing related to the internet and technology. And maybe because people are more open to talking about it, you know, with e-readers and more chat rooms and all that. But there is COSA, you know, Co-Sex Addicts Anonymous, which is, you know, like CODA, it's kind of a codependency program, but specifically it's a room where a man or woman can walk in and talk about being sexually betrayed. There's S-Anon, which is like Al-Anon. These are free, nonprofit 12-step programs where you can go online or find them locally. And, you know, this is, by the way, something that nobody talks about. My role model, Pat Carnes, would say that sexual secrets are those that are the most painful and troubling to us, and they're also the ones that we're least likely to tell. It's very hard for a woman to look up and tell her sister, her mother, her neighbor that her husband or boyfriend has been, you know, engaging in sex with, you know, 15 other people a month. I mean, that's just not like, it's easier to say to someone, my spouse is maybe having a drinking problem, or maybe they're spending too much money at the casino, you know, that, because that's not as personal. But unfortunately, especially for a woman, our culture still kind of says, well, you know, if somebody's straying, it's because you're not doing a good enough job keeping them around. And that's a cultural, you know, a harmful cultural message that women get. And if they have a man doing this, and especially I have to say with pornography now, because, you know, when there's no way that anyone could ever look like some of the images that you see online.
Yes.
And if you have a partner who's looking at porn 3 hours a day, a male partner, for example, you know, he's looking at situations and images that are airbrushed, that are blown up, that are, have loops. You know, there's no way that people really can look and act in those ways. And then a spouse says to themselves, well, if he's looking at that 3 hours a day, well, maybe that's what he really wants, and I can never look like that. I've had 2 children, or I'm 45, or, you know, and so the self-esteem of the spouse begins to get chipped away because they can never be what they think that other person really wants.
Yes. You know, you mentioned the word our culture. I know you do international work, don't you?
I do international work. It's been really interesting to me over the last, I would say 3 or 4 years, well, longer than that, maybe about 6 years, how things spread. You know, the United States, in one area that we really are the gold standard is in addiction treatment.
Okay.
Whether it's behavioral addictions or substance addictions, we are and remain the gold standard in the world, and people come from all over the world to learn from us. How do I treat gamblers? How do I treat people who are sex addicts? What do I do with an alcoholic? Because we were the leaders in this area. And so I've had the opportunity, three occasions with the military. I was brought over to Okinawa, to Frankfurt, and some places in the States to train military therapists, military chaplains, how to deal with these kinds of issues, because certainly they're going on when people are under that kind of stress and those long-term separations. That kind of situation really fosters this. And also, I have had the opportunity to be brought over to England and Amsterdam and Stockholm and even Asia to talk about what this problem is, because, you know, these are cultures where either nobody ever talks about sex, or in some of them, anything anyone does sexually is perfectly fine. And, you know, there has to be some balance in the middle, and where we do talk about these things and everything isn't fine. And I think we have a better handle on that in the States, in those of us who work with sex addiction, than most other places. So I travel a lot.
You do sexual addiction intervention as well, yes?
I don't personally do interventions. I would, okay. But I train people to do them and call them in to do them because, you know, and this is not an easy area of intervention. Again, you know, it's not like
saying this has got to be very different the way that you, the protocol, the way you go about it.
Well, you know, in an intervention, you kind of bring the whole family together. You might bring a boss in, you know, those kinds of things. If there's a drinking problem and say, hey, we all care about you. We don't want you to learn, you know, and then the person goes away and gets help. But that isn't necessarily the case when they're seeing prostitutes 3 days a week and having affairs and looking at porn every other day at work. You know, you don't bring a group of people together and talk about that.
So it must be a developing field.
I don't even think it really exists. I think the field of intervention for behavioral addictions, gambling, sex, and food, is really in its infancy. Interventionists in drug and alcohol addiction are still struggling out what their certifications should be and how their licensure should go. So really the field of intervention in our country is really at the beginning period, and certainly in terms of behavior problems like sex, gambling, spending, internet use, they're really, you know, I only work with people I really know, and I know that they know what they're doing.
Yes, yes. Well, okay, listen, I just wanted to, we are about 3 minutes to close of the show. I just wanted to, mention the Sexual Recovery Institute again as far as a place to receive treatment and guidance. Is the call-in number for SRI 866-585-9174?
It might well be. We have a whole bunch of phone numbers depending on whether someone's local or not. I think the best way is to find us is sexualrecovery.com.
Okay. Okay.
Just because not only just for us, but I mean, certainly we're a great resource for treatment. But I think that if somebody wants to know what book should I read or what is a 12-step program or where would I find a therapist in my area or, you know, all of that stuff, I've been doing this for a long time. So our website's been up for 18 years. So there's tons of articles and self-tests and all of that can be found at sexualrecovery.com. And also I want to say that, you know, Pat Carn's book, Out of the Shadows, is still the gold standard for anyone who thinks they're a sex addict and they might want to read about that problem and see if they have the problem. There's a book called Waiting to Heal, which is for women who think they might have this problem. And it's by a friend of mine named Kelly McDaniel out in San Antonio wrote it. I wrote a book called Cruise Control, which is for gay men who think they might have a sexual addiction problem. So mostly any area of the population, male, female, gay, or straight, they can find literature about this, and all that stuff's on sexualrecovery.com. They can look it up.
Yeah, I can't thank you enough for joining us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
It's about time to close down, but I do want to just really thank you. This is such good information for people.
Well, I hope I can come back because I don't think this is going away anytime soon.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I'll be glad to have you back.
Good. I look forward to that.
Thank you again. And this is Rebecca with Addiction in America. And if you have an email for me, you can email me at rebecca@addictioninamerica.com, and I will entertain your questions next week. So thank you, listening audience, and thank you, Rob, and have a great week. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Addiction in America. Please join Rebecca Bullion again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central Time, 8 a.m. Pacific Time, and 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. Until our next program, have a good week, and may you be one step closer to conquering your addiction.
I'm having a hard time just trying to understand all the suffering, the misery that man goes through.
Please visit Rebecca's website at www.addictioninamerica.com to get more information on today's show, our guests, and other resources. The website contains a bookstore of material by various authors, musicians, and instructional videos to download. Applications for case management, referrals, and intervention can be made through the bookstore as well. Be sure to visit addictioninamerica.com. Addiction in America is here to help you take control of your life. The website again is www.addictioninamerica.com.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericahealth.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding